dedicated to HBO's Game of Thrones and George R. Martin's Song of Ice and Fire book series. You're listening to Podcast Winterfell.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back to Podcast Winterfell. This is Mike. I am here for the deep dive. I am here with Tracy. Tracy, how's it going?
So great. This episode just, you know, really put us in a good spot, and I can't wait to talk about this. I hope we're not gushing too much.
Okay, that's great. I'm going to, I guess, just let you talk this episode, because otherwise everybody's going to turn us off. We'll see how long you can keep that up. Thanks to all our patrons, and welcome to our newest, Aaron, Vanessa, and Bill. If you have been following us for a little while, you may have noticed something new. We've got some new art. Our new art is super awesome. It's all comic book styly, and it's really sweet. So thank you, huge thank you to Dell on Twitter, at Zamorta, Z-A-M-O-O-R-T-A. Check out his stuff. We're retweeting a bunch of his things, but he's got other things that aren't, you know, game with. It's all good. It's all beautiful, beautiful work. So go give it a look. We're going to be doing lots of podcasts after next week's episode. We're going to be doing at least our regular schedule after the finale that we've been carrying on through all the episodes. But then I think we're also, you know, we've been batting around a lot of ideas. So I don't know how many of them are going to hit the cutting room floor. So I don't want to throw them all out there right now. But if we do 10% of the stuff we've been talking about, you're going to have podcasts till November. So follow us on Twitter at DVR Podcast. Podcast Winterfell is part of the DVR Podcast Network. So follow us at DVR Podcast to keep up with what we're doing. We're going to be covering some other shows and lots more Game of Thrones stuff and more interviews and all kinds of cool things. I actually have, I'm just going to tell you, Tracy, okay? Don't tell anybody, all right?
We're going to keep this between us. Okay, I'm listening.
Right? I can trust you, right, to keep secrets?
Of course. Wait, let me take you off speaker. All right,
okay,
go ahead.
Okay, perfect. I have an interview scheduled next week with two guys who actually write historical fiction. They're historians and military dudes and all that kind of stuff in their own right, but they are also historical fiction authors. They write cool stuff, books that you can buy in the store and everything, you know, all that good stuff. And I'm really excited to talk to them about the process of writing about things that you haven't experienced yourself. You know, I think there's going to be a lot to delve into as far as what we've seen so far. The season, and then, of course, what everybody's looking forward to in Winds of Winter, and just kind of getting into the details of the creative process with the books. So it's not quite so much of a TV show thing, but I think it's going to be really interesting. And I think it'll be cool for people who don't read the books, because everybody's caught up on the story now, so. Oh, wait, we were keeping that secret, and I just talked. Anyway, so follow us at DVR Podcast and keep an eye out for that. So there was some TV this week. I guess we're supposed to talk about it because we promised Axel we would. You want to lead us through this shit show? God, I am doing a terrible job of keeping my attitude in check so far. Let's see if it gets better as we go.
All right. So up front, I'll just say that while this is not one of my favorite episodes, I don't feel the same way about it as you. So I think that'll be good. We won't kind of both be bagging on it, but you know, you're certainly welcome to, because there are plenty of places for criticism. But I will say, and I watched it three times, Sunday, Tuesday, and today, which is Wednesday. And each time I watched it, I did like it a little bit better. And I think it's because once all that fake tension is gone with who lives, who dies, who's not a named character. Once that's gone, you can kind of just go with the flow. The first time I watched it, you know, it was setting up expectations and not meeting them over and over and over again. And that was frustrating me. Once I just ignored all of that, I felt like it was a little bit better. So I don't know. Maybe when we get done talking it through, you'll feel a little different.
I mean, I think, you know, I usually don't listen to any of the podcasts before we record, so, you know, I can have my own opinion, but I couldn't take it this week, and it seemed like there was a lot of people who were upset, so I went ahead and listened. And Tim on the Colin show was curmudgeonly, to say the best, to be as nice as I can be at the beginning, and by the end, he had definitely, you know, Joe Bear and some other people had definitely kind of talked him off the ledge. So hopefully we'll have the same experience.
All right. Let's see what happens. Okay, so we open we open with just kind of like a scan of the painted table in Dragonstone, but our first real scene is in the north, and we get four conversations from our party that's going out to capture the white. We get Tormund, Jon, and Gendry kind of talking about Gendry adjusting to the cold and the various ways to stay warm. We get Tormund and Jon talking about Mance and the pros and cons of bending the knee. Then Beric, Gendry, and the Hound and Thoros kind of talk about when Gendry was sold off to Melisandre and what is and isn't whinging. And then Jorah and Jon have a talk about Jeor Mormont, Ned, and Longclaw. You know, in these four conversations, we kind of have two lighthearted, funny ones, and then we have two more serious ones that are sort of built into this, the long game of the story. First of all, Tormund was a key player. I can't imagine this episode without him. If Tormund wasn't in this episode, it would be a nightmare, I think. So he kept it light and he kept it funny. So I think like that's, he gets the MVP award in my opinion.
Yeah.
But
he's a scene stealer, that guy.
For sure. Like, yeah. What a casting gift.
Yeah.
And they seem to really write well for him. So that's good. Let's be happy for that. You know, that Mance conversation, and when Jon is kind of talking about bending the knee, or he's really listening to Tormund talk about bending the knee or deciding to not bend the knee, and he kind of talks about how, you know, Mance, while he understands to not want to do that, you kind of put your people in danger because now you're basically asking for a fight. And when you ask for a fight, people die. And if they're your people, why aren't you doing what it takes to protect them? So that seed, I think, gets planted into John's head nice and early.
Mm-hmm.
Did you like any of these discussions or did anybody?
Gendry was definitely whinging. There's no doubt about it. Especially just in that crowd. Like, you know, if he came to, like, whatever, my high school reunion, it might sound scary, but, you know.
Right.
In that crowd, he's not impressing nobody with that, you know.
These guys have seen some shit.
Yeah, right? I mean, yeah, I enjoyed all that stuff. You love the Hound and Tormund, you know, you love the whole we're kissed by fire just like you, you know. I mean, all that stuff was great. And it also was some of the more attractive photography that we've seen in a little while. Like, it definitely looked like these guys put on their, you know, Under Armour draws and went out and walked around in the snow. I mean, it didn't look like that was, you know, green screen, right?
Oh, it was gorgeous.
And yeah, so that was something that I really liked. And you know, I enjoyed all of that quite a bit. My issues were much deeper and more threatening than that.
What about John and Jorah? I mean, for me, it didn't touch me in any way. I was kind of like, there's no way John doesn't have Longclaw at the end of this thing. So when he brought it up, I'm like, I feel like they just feel that this has to be said because people at home are going to be like, oh my God, he has his father's sword. Da, 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 and he never said anything. What do you think?
Yeah, well, that, and also I'm watching it and I'm wondering, like, why didn't he give it to Lyanna? To be honest, like, you know, because that's all part of the Mormont family, right?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I realize it's not like the son, but if you're worried about the bloodline and the hundreds of years and all that, why don't you give it to her? You know,
right? And she says she's not going to be knitting by the fire, for God's sakes. I mean, you know, she's going to use the damn thing.
The thing is taller than her at this point, but maybe after they're done, you know, on the rock, right? Details. Yeah, it was. I totally agree. They kind of had to throw it in there, and you can, you know, the way that they just kind of like stepped out of line and like just stopped and like had a moment, you know, it just feels like a thing they had to say, you know?
Yeah. All right. Yeah. Let's do this.
I know there's t-shirts with, I drink and I know things, but I want a t-shirt with, you got to keep moving. Walking is good. Fighting is better. Fucking is best. That was some spectacular Tormund dialogue.
Yeah, and John smiled, and it was cute. Like, it was a nice way to open it, I think. And, you know, you need those moments of levity for sure, and especially to get Gendry back in the fold. You gotta
But let's just stick a pin in I've never seen snow before.
Okay.
We'll carry on.
All right.
Or at least I'm done.
Now I'm ready. Okay.
All right.
All right. So we leave the Norse.
Because I'm a dick, because not only did I not like the episode, but I didn't particularly like what anybody else didn't like about it either. You know what I mean? Like, that's why, like, I feel kind of like a dick, and I'm trying to, like, kind of not ramble on, even though I'm doing that right at this moment.
Because it's fine. And people are different, Mike. Like, it's fine, right? And
well, everybody's complaints were lame, too. Their complaints were much too simple. The problems were much deeper than what everybody was saying. All right, I will get to that.
Okay. And you know what? I said we're leaving the North and we go to Winterfell. That doesn't make any sense. We go
from Tormund's perspective, it is.
Right. We're going south, all the way south to Winterfell. And where we get what starts off as a really nice conversation between Arya and Sansa, where we hear about Ned watching Arya practicing archery and how it made her feel good that he was accepting of who she was. And then she like goes way left and uses this as a way to bring up the letter, accuse Sansa of helping the Lannisters execute Ned. And it really gets ugly between the two. You know, she accuses her of being scared if everybody finds out about the letter. And Sansa's trying to appeal to her logic, basically saying, look, you know, Cersei would be happy to see us fighting. And that doesn't sway Arya in the least. And, you know, it kind of leaves Sansa really shaken. So this burned me up a little bit.
Okay.
I don't understand Arya's approach at all. I don't know what she thought she was going to find out. I don't even know what she really thought she read there. I mean, I don't even think the words in that letter mean she's helping Ned get executed. So, like, for her to say that line of dialogue is just odd to me.
Also, was it you that pointed out that as soon as Rob and Kat saw that letter, they were like, oh, this is bullshit?
Yeah,
I feel like
I
it
did.
Was you that pointed that out, right? Like,
yeah,
their immediate reaction, this is bullshit. And, like, the idea that's beyond, I don't know. I thought that was weak tea from Arya.
Yeah, I really have a hard time understanding, like, why did you come here? Like, what are you looking for? What do you want? Are you trying to rebuild Winterfell and be part of this family? Or are you just going to, like, walk around with your sword and, like, talk shit? Like, what is this about? I don't get it. And I'm really unhappy with where this is going. I don't know. I mean, and it sounds like you kind of feel like it's a little weird, too. Like, it doesn't seem consistent at all.
Okay, let me just ask you one quick question, because everybody's been saying, like, you know, did Arya already kill Littlefinger and all this other nonsense? Bullshit. I don't buy any of that. Is there any scenario in which that's not Arya? Because this seems, like you said, a left turn. Like, I realize that's a far out of the box concept. How would that be possible? But, I mean, it seems such a weird turn. And the thing is, with this one, I'm totally willing to wait till next episode and see what happens. Like, I am totally being patient with this scenario. I agree it felt funny, and I don't know what the hell she's thinking. I do not believe that there's going to be that this is all, like, a performance for Littlefinger, and next, you know, episode we're going to get them, like, high-fiving in the middle of the road over his dead body, like the end of Death Proof, you know? Some, like, 70s chick revenge flick. I just don't think that's going to happen at all. But I'm willing to be patient with this one and wait to find out. When she turned the blade and gave it to Sansa, I was like, all right.
You're in the future, Mike.
Oh, I'm sorry. I skipped ahead. You're right.
Yes.
This was a wonderful scene, and it was weird.
Okay.
No, the whole thing with Ned was great. It, you know, the callbacks to, I mean, that stuff is really sweet. You love
Absolutely.
That stuff. But I, of course, it was obviously, it could have been a grounds for her to, like, dip back into what really happened or whatever, some version of a con, but then it didn't do that, which I think just made it weirder.
Yeah, I don't know. She has that really great line where she says the rules were wrong.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it's like you can pretty much say that about any plot line in the mm-hmm. whole series.
Mm-hmm.
And to follow that with this BS fight really burns me. Like, I almost wish they would have just stopped at that moment or let them kind of like walk off together, kind of chit-chatting about dad, mom, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And then save the fight for another scene. It like totally soured it for me. So that's where I am on that.
I do want to give a quick shout to Maisie Williams, though, because when Arya said, like, you were there, what did you do? Like, you saw that moment in Arya's face. You know, that I thought, like, I just want to give that quick little shout out to the actress that, like, you know, she's got a very specific thing that she's doing here, and it's a threatening tone and all that kind of stuff. But in that moment, she had a pang. And mm-hmm. I saw it, and I appreciated that. So, Wow. Anyway.
All right. I have to look back at that to see if the response on her face, because I was so happy for Sansa for, like, standing up for herself, because I thought mm-hmm. she was just going to wilt. Mm-hmm. And I was really happy she yep. turned it right around.
Oh, I agree. And that was a well-edited scene. You know, they gave Arya that reaction, which, you know, they don't have to do. Because the point right. is made. The point is made when the words come out of her face. Everybody knows, remembers that, right? So you don't necessarily have to give us that reaction shot, but I was glad we got it. And I was glad she lived up to it.
Yeah. All right, cool. All right, so back across the wall or over the wall or through it. yeah, we get more chit-chatting. Tormund and the Hound talk gingers, the scars, euphemisms for male anatomy, and Brienne of Tarth. Beric and Jon talk Ned coming back to life, what the Lord of Light really wants for Jon, for Beric, and those two seem to bond over fighting for other people rather than seeking joy or happiness for themselves. Mm-hmm. This is probably where Tormund shines the most. I mean, the whole thing is great. And the Hound, too. Like, he plays the good sort of, like, curmudgeonly straight man to yep. Tormund's, like, nuttiness.
Definitely.
And when he talks about Brienne, that might yep. be one of my favorite exchanges, right, in this whole thing. It was endearing, right, because he tries to talk big like she's his girl, you know, and then once he's like, I know her, and it's like, well, she's not my girlfriend. I mean, like, I like her, right? It's uh-huh. so real life. Like, you've totally known guys who are like, yeah, 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 that girl. And then you're like, oh, wait a yep. minute. You know, you have her number. I didn't yep. say she was my girl. Hold on. Right? Don't get yep. me in trouble.
Yep.
It was beautifully done. So, like, wow. Shout out to them for that.
Yep. Good stuff.
And you sort of, like, you get that really fun scene, and then you get the sort of, like, emo, existential, pondering life and sacrifice and why are we here conversation that's perfect for Jon and Beric. This was interesting to me. It was nice that they threw it back to Ned. I mean, I think that's really great for show-only people who
sure.
may not even have remembered that scene where, you know, it was a different actor and all he did was, I think, nod his head when Ned sends him off to chase the mountain.
Right.
So that's pretty cool. But it's interesting where when they're talking about, like, what's the purpose? Why do I come back? And Beric says something like, just us came back, which I'm wondering why he thinks that's true. But they... Oh,
How
and John...
How would he know that?
Right. Like, I'm curious. I don't know if that was just like a clunky line or that right. actually means something. But it was interesting how John kind of relates it back to the Night's Watch oath. And he looks like he's drinking all that in. He's just like, yeah, like, maybe that's who I am. I need to protect people who can't protect themselves. And mm-hmm. when they said they don't seek joy, I'm like, you're talking to the right guy, because John is freaking dour. You tell him that's his purpose, and he's like, I get it. I totally get it.
And, you know, then he relates it back to the Night's Watch, which is, you know, really kind of an extension of the only thing he's ever particularly cared about. You know, I fight for the North, all that kind of stuff, blah, blah, blah. Yeah, square jaw. Let's do it. Have you ever read Bill Bryson?
No.
Author named Bill Bryson. He wrote one of my favorite books ever, which is called A Short History of Nearly Everything. And it's really a it's supposedly a book about science, but it's really a book about scientists and like how fucking weird they all are. You know, it's very it's like a history of human thought. It's an incredible book. But he's got a bunch of other books about language. You know, he's got a book about American English and a book about English and how these things developed and all this stuff. And one of the things that he talks about all the time is words that are appropriate to their meaning, you know, that like sound just right somehow, you know, that kind of thing. Right. And all I could think about watching that scene with Hound and Tormund was, you know, Bill Bryson was right. Like the word dick, like it's kind of perfect. Like it's just kind of like short and hard and dumb, like it's kind of like it really is like he's like, yeah, I like a dick, like it really is kind of a, you know. So I really enjoyed that. I like those two guys a lot, and then you see him pull him out of the ice later, and I almost even liked it. So, and I don't, you know, I'm kind of over Beric. I feel like Beric is basically they just have kind of copy and pasted his dialogue for the last, you know, two seasons, basically. I mean, right? Like, when has he said anything else? But
yeah, he's not. I mean, his personality is basically brought back from the dead, right? Like, right. He doesn't express anything else other than just like move forward. So,
right.
You know, it's fine. I definitely thought he was going to die in this, but I'm curious if they are going to, I think Matt was talking about this. Was it Matt? I don't know. How he might do what he did in the book that ended his life for someone else. But I don't know who that might be. Right. Do you know what I'm talking about?
Say that again.
So Beric is dead in the book, right?
Yes.
So what he did to die, he's going to maybe do that to somebody else. And maybe that's why they're keeping him alive. That I think Matt suggested that. And I was thinking something similar. Because what other purpose does it, like, what's the difference between him and Tharos? Honestly, like,
right.
Like, who cares? Why does he need to live?
Right. Right.
Everybody loves the body count. So like, why wouldn't they give us one more? So there must be, I feel like, you know, Matt was onto something there.
Are we going to not say what it is?
I don't know.
I mean, this is the book reader deep dive, right? Are we going to not say
it? I'm so gun shy. That's why I'm glad you're here. You just like pull the trigger. So go ahead and say it though.
No, but I mean, you make an interesting point that the reason we pull the trigger is because none of this shit could possibly come. Like, you know, at this point, right? Like, you know, Jane Poole's out of the show. You know, so right. So we talk about that stuff, but this is a very interesting point that might actually still come up. That is one of the rare things that could. All right, so I think you're right. I think you are correct in this instance. We leave it alone. Fascinating.
Okay.
Fascinating. All right, we're gonna have to do like a 3-minute extra podcast or something. Oh, shit. It's going to be our shortest podcast ever.
Yep. As soon as Matt brought it, I swear that's who it was. And I'm nodding my head like, yep.
Yeah, no, I think you're right. And they didn't spell it out over there either.
Okay.
So yeah, we'll go ahead and stick to it.
I want to leave it alone. Yeah. Okay.
Okay. All right.
All right. So we can move on to Dragonstone. Yeah. Okay. So Dany's talking to Tyrion and her, you know, saying you're not a hero, but she does allow that she sees him as being brave. And Tyrion claims Jon loves her and she kind of acts like she doesn't believe him. There's some Cersei talk about laying traps, deceit and mass murder. But tensions start to rise when Tyrion suggests that killing both of the Tarleys was impulsive and wrong. He then doubles down and pisses her off even more with talk of succession. He wants to make sure that in the case of her death, we have someone lined up to be the leader. So I kind of looked at this like Tyrion was a little bit scared. He's out on an island here. And if this doesn't go his way, he's screwed. He has nowhere to go. And I think he needs to know that the Dothraki, the Unsullied, they're going to fight for this cause if she dies. Because without a person lined up, right, it dies with her.
We were having this conversation 2 weeks ago about the whole thing with Jamie rushing her at the dragon. What happens if she dies? Her whole thing is shit. If Jamie dies, the Lannisters carry on.
Why would the Dothraki Cersei's even knocked up her? Now.
Right.
Yeah, right?
Exactly.
The Dothraki are just going to do the Dothraki thing in Westeros, right? They would just move on and go to cities and pull monuments and create their own Vice Dothrak there, right? Like, they would just rebuild. I mean, Grey Worm could be, you know, the head of the Unsullied and keep it moving. I mean, why would they listen to Tyrion, say?
All right. Okay, but fuck this show. What does breaking the wheel mean?
I hate that analogy, metaphor, whatever. I hate it. It's so overused.
Has it ever? I'm not even talking about it as a dialogue crutch. Has anybody ever explained in any way whatsoever what that means?
Yeah, I mean, each spoke is supposed to represent one of the great houses. And the wheel part of it, linking them all together, is basically like Westeros power. And she's saying, like, as it turns, like, a
but
different
Aegon
spoke is on the top.
Created the wheel.
Details.
All right. But what is that? Okay, but that's, I understand the fucking mythos of it. Let's get back to logistics. We've been off logistics for a few episodes because we're trying to be nice and do some lifting. But what is that, like, I understand, okay, so does that mean she's just going to kill all the Randall and Dick and Tarleys in the whole entire place, and we're just going to let, I don't know what, like, just
honestly,
people move into Highgarden? Like,
right, I mean, you raise a good point, because I don't know what her ruling philosophy is, right? When she was on the other side, when she was in Essos and all those other places, we kind of... Her philosophy never got more developed than slavery bad, right?
Right?
And she was able to succeed in that and barely hold on. So she never got a chance to even try her hand at a different approach or how to run things, right? She was constantly putting out fires. So,
the thing is, and I'm just going to say this quietly, and I'm only going to say it once, but we never got any sense that anybody in that whole fucking place did anything differently than what they did before those assholes showed up. They just didn't have the necklaces on. So I don't know exactly what difference it really made. I mean, I understand, like, I'm not saying, you know, breaking slavery isn't good for its own sake, right? But wouldn't it have been nice to get a sense of, like, you know, I don't know, somebody opening a small business or something, and somebody, like, starting a school, or I don't know, like, doing something, you know, outside of what they were already doing. Mm-hmm. Everybody who's in the Unsullied was just like, yeah, no problem. Like, I don't know how to do shit else. I don't have my junk. I might as well just go wherever you're going.
Yeah,
and so you're
right.
Kind of like, okay, fine. But you're telling me that the entire population of the city of Meereen, like, nothing, I never got a sense that anything actually changed there. So, okay, it's awesome to break slavery, but you break slavery for what? And if I don't know that, then I don't know what the hell we're doing over here now. I mean, I don't like Cersei either, but killing Cersei doesn't break the wheel. I'm not sure killing Randall Tarly, but I don't have any idea what that means. So what the hell are we doing? Like, this just doesn't... All right, I'm sorry.
How dare you? How dare you ask these questions?
I'm sorry. This is what I mean about deeper problems is that, you know,
right.
And I said this last week or 2 weeks ago or whatever, I think when they were making this stupid plan for everybody to go above the wall, George has managed to do you know, George and D&D have managed to do 6 seasons of this dragon show without it feeling like fantasy, because it was about power politics and people. And it was just kind of turned up to the nth degree by all of their magical abilities and the fact that they had no scruples whatsoever about torture and incest and all these other things, right? But the base emotions of, you know, loyalty and patriotism and you know, family bonds and all, you know, we could relate jealousy and we could love, we could relate to all of these things. And now, you know, because it is ultimately a fantasy story and George is ultimately a fantasy writer and loves Lord of the Rings and all this other business, at some point it might have been insane for anyone to think that it wasn't going to turn into that at some point. And now here we are, where it just like, and it feels like they just flipped a fucking stupid switch. Like, it doesn't feel like we got here gradually. It feels like just all of a sudden they flipped a stupid switch and now it's become this whole other thing. I forgot what we were even talking about. Oh, the books. I mean, does it really seem possible that, like, the major issues in this thing, which are not Gendry and the Hound, right? The major issues in this thing, is it really possible that those aren't going to be in the book? Like, the changes that they've made from the book to the show have been significant if you know all the shit in the book, right? But, like, the Red Wedding didn't not happen in the book. You know what I mean? Like, that was in the book, right? So you're telling me that all these people get together and go above the wall, but that's not going to be in the book? It's hard for me to imagine that's not in the book. In which case, you know, in which case, the showrunners, what the hell are they supposed to do? They're going to not do that? I mean, this is a significant storyline. And there's, it turns out, I think a good reason ultimately for them to do that. I just don't think they had to do it in that way. So if it turns out in the book that this isn't the way they did it, then, I mean, hashtag no Confederate, hashtag no D&D forever. If this shit's not in the book.
I'm going to want answers. Like, and that, whose
and
that idea?
Bugs
I want
the
names.
Hell out of me. Right. I yes. Want names. Yes. And that bugs the hell out of me because I'm excited for the books. Not because I think they're better than the TV show. They're just different. Right. But how they're different is because they're so much richer and more detailed and more involved, you know, and that's what's great. That's the difference between books and TV shows. But if that means I got to read 800 fucking pages of these idiots developing this terrible idea and then carrying it out, I don't know how I'm going to be able to finish that.
I think if this is in the book, it's going to be better because some of the things that caused confusion is because of decisions they made of what they chose to show us and then contradict in the next scene.
But see,
you know,
see,
things like that. I feel like it'll be
tighter.
Those things
don't bother me. That's not nearly as much. I think I know what you're talking about, but like, I am completely willing to overlook most of those things that I've heard. You may have some different ones that I'm like, oh yeah, you're right. That's unexcusable. But I don't even know where we were at. I'm upset.
I know. You're a little riled. That's fine. I was more riled up last week, so, you know, that's cool.
Good.
Wait, damn. I wanted to... All right, I'll remember later. So we're going to go... Oh, God. We're going to go back over to past the wall, whiteout conditions. We get the bear attack. Tharos is injured. And the fire seems to slow this bear down, but not stop it. So the question is it like a White Walker bear or is it a white bear? Because the fire didn't just, like, there was a lot of fire, but was it just because it was so, like, what do you think? Or do you think it doesn't even freaking matter and don't waste your time?
I actually really liked the zombie bear. I thought it was super sweet. And like separated from the rest of the stupid storyline, that was actually a really cool scene. I liked the whiteout conditions and everybody lining up back to back. You know, I thought all that stuff was cool. I didn't really take it that the fire didn't destroy it. I just kind of took it that like it's just such a mass, like it's going to be harder to kill a white giant, you would think, mm-hmm. than like this like skeleton with a little bit of shitty skin stretched over it, you know? And you'll notice that like the one, there's the scene where John is like laying on his back and one of them comes flying up and it's basically just a skeleton and he just stabs his, you know, long claw up in the air and the thing just breaks apart. Mm-hmm. Right? Whereas other ones, you know, that get lit on fire by, I know I'm jumping ahead again, but it's relative, right, to the bear. The other ones that like kind of get lit on fire, they still have time for Thoros to kick them, you know, and some little things like that. So I more just kind of took it as the thing has more mass.
Okay.
Then, but I did not think of it as a walker. I definitely thought it was a bear white.
And then the blue eyes, because Gendry says it has blue eyes. Do you think there's any consistency with, if you see the blue eyes, it's this. If it doesn't have the blue eyes, it's that, or just whatever.
Yeah,
it's undead, but it had the blue eyes, right? So all those other whites didn't.
Well, I think that I suppose that's a good point. I mean, I guess I hadn't thought about it in terms of like the division of labor within the White Walker camp. I just kind of thought of it like, is it a part of them or is there some other thing that's also reanimating the dead, which I did not think. So maybe, you know, he touched this one.
Yeah,
you know?
Right. I mean, I'm wondering if we're picking up some new rules or what here. Because the blue eye thing is, you know, to me, that means one thing.
That may be proprietary to the Night's King. Hmm. Is that what you're thinking? Like, even the other members of the council can't necessarily do that thing, but he obviously did it to them? Or what's your interpretation of the new
rule? Like, when the Night's King touches something, it becomes a walker, mm-hmm. like, of that level, right, of the higher, the tier above,
right.
And then there are just these sort of undead hive mind type zombie creatures, the whites.
And have we seen them being like raised as a group
in Hardhome? That's when he did the come at me bro,
right,
sort of
and
motion.
It's not like he walked around and touched them all.
No.
Right,
he just
kind of raised
you
them.
Know
yeah. Whereas he, like, you know, had to place hands on, he had to do that Pentecostal shit on the dragon. So,
right, and the baby, right? He had to touch
right.
the baby and then the eyes.
So he may very well have done that with the bear as well.
Which is kind of scary because they're thinking fire will stop all of this except them. You know,
they just walked right through it.
Yeah, sure did. Yeah. But if there are other, like anything with blue eyes, they've got to get it with the dragon glass or Valyrian steel.
Right. Which means the dragon. Okay. Sorry. I'm skipping.
Yeah.
God, I'm terrible.
I know. That's all right.
That's why you're in charge of the order. I'm sorry.
Never put me in charge of anything. That's horrible. All right. So we are going to Winterfell. It seems like Sansa's really freaked out by Arya. She goes to Littlefinger, and she's a little worried that she might lose some support if Arya goes around with the letter. Littlefinger brings up Brienne and points out that she's supposed to be a protector of both girls and would get involved if she thought one was going to hurt the other. So I really, at the time, wasn't sure what was going on here. I think that gets sort of revealed later. But it kind of annoys me that she went to him. She mm-hmm. said that he's not a generous man to Bran. She knows that he's just a slickster. She knows he's out for himself. So I just wish that she didn't bring her problems to him because he exploits them. You know, he finds weaknesses in people. That's his thing. I don't know if she thinks she's special. You know, to him, and like he wouldn't do that to her. I really hope she doesn't think something like that. But that was just my
takeaway. Given that impression. I mean, she certainly hasn't. I am not under the impression she thinks she's immune from. You know,
yeah.
I mean, she said to him, "You know, you sold me to this monster."
Mm-hmm. Right.
Or you gave me to this monster, or whatever. You know. Yeah, I thought that scene was really kind of more about Littlefinger's impotence than anything else. You know, because she keeps talking about all the people she's got that are sworn to her, you know, and all this kind of stuff. And then he says the whole thing about Brienne, and then we see how she reacts. So I really took that scene to be more about just the Littlefinger's inability to really affect anything. Like, what, you know, she said, where did she get it? And he says, I don't know. She seems to be resourceful. Right. Well, brilliant observation, Baelish. Jeez.
Liar.
Paid her.
All right. So I guess, you know, and when we get to where this sort of comes to a head with, you know what, let's just talk about it now when she talks to Brienne. Let's just get right to it. So we see Sansa get a letter where she's invited to King's Landing by Cersei. And then we jump ahead to where she is sending Brienne, who is giving some resistance because she doesn't feel that Sansa should be left alone. Sansa gets a little offended, a little dismissive, and sends Brienne on her way. So I felt like Sansa got nasty because she really wanted Brienne to go.
Sure.
Does she not want Brienne to fight Arya? Like, is she trying to protect her sister by getting Brienne out of the way? That's the only thing I could think of there.
I took this as her protecting, like, basically saying that she still trusts Arya, and that at least enough to not cut her fucking face off, right?
Right.
And that she doesn't trust Littlefinger. And that, you know, the best way to make sure that Littlefinger doesn't essentially try to talk Brienne, who doesn't like him, by the way, mm-hmm, I mean, but right, there's no reason to think that he's going to do it directly. But, you know, that basically, like, as long as the idea that Brienne might somehow think harming or in otherwise incapacitating Arya is a thing she needs to do to protect Sansa, that idea could only come from Littlefinger, regardless of the actual, you know, means of communication. The source would be Littlefinger, and that she doesn't think Arya is going to kill her. And so the best thing to do is just to send Brienne off and, you know, have her go make babies with Jaime, which are not nearly as cool as her babies with Tormund.
Oh boy. Okay. I don't know about that. you know what though? I think Littlefinger, I mean, him bringing up Brienne was pretty smart because, you know, let's say Sansa didn't send Brienne away and she did get involved. I mean, Littlefinger still wins in that situation too, because, you know, chances are Arya gets hurt. Brienne is like, it's just a mess. It's chaos, right?
Yeah,
you know,
there's a mess.
So either way, whatever Sansa does, right, it's better. It's good for him.
Yes.
This one's the best one. Brienne gone. But either way, he's covered.
Yeah. And I just don't, I mean, I just have a hard time seeing Brienne, you know, because she has pledged to both of them, right?
Mm-hmm.
So it seems unrealistic to me, the idea that she's going to fight Arya. And she doesn't seem to me like the kind of person who's really much of useful as a mediator.
No.
So it just kind of, you know, but more than anything else, I took it as a statement of her having some faith left in Arya, despite the fact that she is frightened, you know, reasonably so.
All right. So we saw that one the same way. All right. Cool.
And again, right, as another sign of Littlefinger's impotence, which I don't know how he's going to rectify. I keep using that word. I don't mean it in the urologist sense, but you know, I don't know how he's going to rectify that. But that's not a situation that he, you know, that's really tenable for his character. So, but we've been saying that all season, right? Nothing's changed.
Do you think Littlefinger, I mean, I've heard people say that they think Littlefinger's going to die in this next episode. I do not.
So.
You hope so, but do you think so?
No, I do not. I hope so,
yeah,
but I'm,
I
no,
yeah.
I don't think so.
I mean, feel like he'd go out with a whimper, and that's not.
Yeah, well, and we all know that, you know, he started this whole thing, so,
yeah,
you know, I'm not sure how he goes out exactly, but it seems like, this would be a weird way for him to walk out powerless, of the show. You know what I mean? For this character to leave the show. Because what happens if he goes? Like, literally nothing. Right. The Knights of the Vale aren't, like, changing their mind. You know, not at this point. I mean, she's
They're like,
go
I'm not dragging my stuff back up that damn hill. Get out of here.
Yeah, exactly. We're in Winterfell exactly. now. Exactly. They might try to, you know, flex for her over John or something. Or that might go away because that might have, you know, because Littlefinger was driving all of that too. But effectively, nothing changes. And that would be a weird place for him to be in his final days. So. Yeah.
All right. Let's go back to the snow. We get Jorah and Thoros reminiscing about the Greyjoy Rebellion. And right after that, we find the small group of whites. We get a little skirmish until Jon kills the walker that's with them. And all but one of them perish. And the crew tries to subdue the one white that didn't fall apart. And they hear the big army of the dead in the background. John realizes that this is bad and sends Gendry back to Eastwatch to send a raven to Dany. So, I mean, this Jorah and Thoros thing I thought was cute. You know, I guess to just sort of pass the time. It's a nice callback, and people who read the books have read about this Greyjoy Rebellion a ton. So I think it was a nice little shout out to us. Like, we didn't forget, you know, or we really did read the books, guys, promise. And, you know, like, put that in there. Like, leave us alone. But I think, you know, obviously the real star is what happened when Jon killed the walker. And I have to say that in the initial reaction, Axel, like, he's as strong as the mountain now with the heavy lifting he was doing for the writers. God. In explaining why the party is set up the way it is, the walker, and there's always one that was created by another walker to send out the... I mean, like, wow. He created an entire freaking... Like, he did world building, basically, in the initial reaction. And it was pretty impressive, and it all made sense, but, like, we shouldn't have to do all that.
Yep. But he should write a comic book that George can endorse.
But I feel like that piece of the story is helpful because I don't know how else they're going to get through all of these zombies without having this sort of element into the story. What do you think about it?
Yeah, I totally agree. I don't see how else you do it, you know. That scene was dumb. I mean, when have we ever seen, like, they don't really have ranging parties. They all hang out together, right?
Yeah. I mean, we've never really seen that before.
You saw the one that, like, somehow was in Castle Black, but it seemed like it was just kind of lost and confused. You know, you saw the one that Sam killed, you know. So, I mean, there's some precedent for it, I guess, but not just like one walker with like eight dudes like that. I don't think we've ever seen. Right. And so it just, the whole thing was dumb.
Well, I mean, we had to get them their one white for them to take back. Right. So, you know, this is that, right? Like, we came here for this. We got it. Okay. I love how when they had it like surrounded and then they were like, what do we do now? Like, guys, you've been walking for, we're not allowed to talk about time. So, but for a while and like nobody knew. Okay. When we like Tormund, get the rope from around your body. Hound, freaking like what?
Yeah.
They're so busy reminiscing, right? That they can't. Okay. Moving on.
Mm-hmm. I did appreciate that John went straight for the walker, you know.
Yes.
I've liked that character more and more, both in the books and in the show, with each passing page, with each passing scene. I like him a little more. You know, I have my complaints about him or whatever, just in terms of like how archetypal he is in a lot of ways, right? But I appreciate it in that scene. He's the one that went straight for the guy, You know, good for you. So, yeah.
Well, that's like what he and Beric were kind of talking about, right? Like,
right.
We're the ones that go for it.
Yep.
Let them deal with the dumb zombies. And the zombies put up a decent fight. I mean, it wasn't small potatoes, so that was kind of interesting to see. You know, we kind of got to focus on a small number to see what they could do. And in a one-on-one, I mean, they were given as good as they were getting.
Okay, but listen to what you're saying here. Because what you're saying in itself about that moment is correct. However, in context of the rest of the things, I think is exactly incorrect, which is that a group of people who fight really good as like 10 people don't suddenly just turn to shit when there's 10,000 of them. That's not how that works, right? So the idea that somehow they're more competent and more capable when there's fewer of them is just, it just defies any sense of consistent storytelling whatsoever. You've got this small group with this one guy, you know. So, okay, I've heard a couple of people say, I think it was on the call-in show, that they, you know, that was basically a setup, you know, working with an ambush, you know, working with the same idea that the Night King is a green seer, so he knows what all these people are doing before they do it. He knows when Bran's ravens are showing up. He knows when these guys went over the wall. He knows all these things before they happen. So he sends out this little ranging party for them to go and you know, basically set up an ambush, right? Okay. So he's going to sacrifice one of the walkers, which is essentially what he does, right? Because that's what those guys do. They don't really fight. They just kind of stand behind the horde and, you know, throw javelins or whatever. So apparently they're shit fighters. So, A, he's going to sacrifice one of the walkers because he knows he can't fight, but he's going to send him out there. Or at least he knows that this guy, you know, Snow could, you know, if anybody's going to kill his guy, this guy's one of the people who can, right? So he sends him out to die. And then these guys who are supposed to be the only, you know, you take Tormund with you because he's been walking around up there. You take Jon because he's already killed a couple of these people. You got the Hound because he saw them all in his magic, you know, in his magic fire. And somehow all of these people, like, don't have the good sense. Jon says, where's the rest of them? And Tormund's like, we'll find out. And that's all. here we go. Fuck it. Like, you know, like, what, doesn't Jorah get a chance to comment or something? Tormund's been the one who was saying this is stupid from the beginning. And now he's the one that's like, ah, let's just go, you know, knock it off. It doesn't make any sense. Anyway, so even if you excuse all of that stuff, the idea that these guys now suddenly, you know, somehow become Knights of the fucking Vale, you know, when, and then 10 minutes later, they're back to being morons who are dragging their swords across the ice. It just, it undercuts itself. And that's like this, there were so many things in this episode that the explanation undercut the problem. Like, if that's the explanation, you know, because that's not how you want things to be explained. You don't want things to be explained with something that would have been easier to fucking begin with. You want things to be explained in some way that made this adventure necessary. And that
but we know the purpose. We know the purpose. The whole purpose was wrong. They didn't need this anyway, right?
This is what I'm saying. But so now here we are, and I'm like, you know, you guys have made some pretty good TV. I like your books. I'm going to give it a shot. And then I watched an hour and 20 minutes, and they didn't give me shit. They did not give me a good explanation for why they had to do this. They just gave me a bunch of, you know, just kind of dumb stuff that undercut itself and made me wonder what I was doing. Anyway, I'm highly annoyed. We haven't even gotten to the shit that made me the most upset yet. Carry on.
Just getting into it. this part is split. I had to split it into three pieces. After they realize that, you know, well, Gendry leaves, they take his hammer because you'll go faster. Okay, fine. This is the part where they're kind of running over. They have to run over that lake that's like semi-frozen. They make it past the thin part, but the wights fall in and they're able to retreat to a rock. There are so many wights now, and they just pretty much surround this like lake or pond thing that they're sort of hiding on, and they decide to just wait it out. And we see Gendry make it to Eastwatch with one, you know, second to spare. Davos grabs him and says, get the maester. I thought this looked kind of cool. I mean, in terms of drama and tension, you know, I was all right with it. It looked scary as hell. The shot that, you know, of from above where you see there's like this lower circle and then there's like an upper circle. I thought that was pretty freaking scary because you get to see how many there are. Gendry making it to Eastwatch, I did not expect, but I'll allow it. Fine. And that's that.
I mean, this is another one of those things where if you know you're going to have him be the one that walks back, why do you even have him say, I've never seen snow before? I mean, like, I'm not that annoyed by the idea that he was able to make it there because, like, you know, it's the castle at the end of the wall, right? So you just go south until you see the big sheet of ice, and then you go to the left until you get to the part with the hole in it. Like, I wasn't that annoyed by the idea that somehow he managed to find it. Because there's really no other landmark, you know, that's the main landmark, you know. I walked around, right, this town, like, for you used the World Trade Center, and then you used the stupid, the Empire State Building until they built the new thing downtown, right? When you're in Queens, you use the Citibank Building. Like, that made sense to me, you know, in terms of, like.
I used the Hudson.
Exactly.
Oh, where's the Hudson? Okay, that's east. All right.
Exactly. Precisely. And you can figure out everything else you need to know from that landmark. So that didn't particularly bother me. Right. But this idea, you know, that you're going to send the guy that's never seen snow. It's just like, why even say that? And maybe some people, some really snotty people afterwards are going to be like, Gendry, he's never even seen snow. You didn't have to write it in.
Right. That line, he's just cold. I mean, he's from King's Landing. He's cold.
Yep. So,
like, yeah, when people visit up here from the south, they're cold.
Right. Exactly.
You know, like, it happens.
So, so the overhead shot, which was very impressive, I agree. There were some moments there where it looked like, where this very much looked like the frozen part. From the intro that Axel was talking about. Remember in the top of the season? Is there any way that this is like a part of that body of water?
Would that make sense at all? Is that a body of water though? Or was it just like weird?
Yeah, no, because it was unfrozen in the intro. You know what I'm talking about
But Axel, I thought he kind of like debunked that when he kind of did his like Zapruder film.
No, see, fascinating. I took the film as proving it, and you took it as here we go. This is how we're still arguing if there was a fucking moon landing.
Oh my god, please don't, because so many of my students are conspiracy. They like YouTube.
No,
and
I am
they
not
believe
no.
every conspiracy. I can't even. Oh,
no.
God.
No, it's a round earth and we went to the moon. Don't be fucking ridiculous.
I can't tell you. I had to explain why the earth is not flat 3 times last year. I can't do it anymore.
Oh, God.
YouTube.
Yeah, there's lots of smart people that have talked about this before. My favorite one, though, is the one, if the earth was flat, cats would have pushed everything off the side by now. that's the best explanation of all.
Oh, my God.
So I took Axel's thing to basically say that it was water and then it was and it became frozen. And so the questioning was whether did like the Night's King freeze it? Or did it just kind of freeze because winter came? And this looked like a way that we talked about this quite a bit in the first couple episodes. This looked like a way that the Army of the Dead would be able to flank the wall. You know, they don't have to go over it. They don't have to go through it. They don't have to tear it down. They can just walk around it because now the water has frozen at least enough of it at the edge, you know, that they should be able to use that to traverse. And I took that as a, I took all of that as a yes, that all of that was happening and that's how it was going to function. And then there were a couple of shots from the overhead that looked basically exactly the same. So is that just how they're showing snow on ice, or was, you know, was this somehow a part of that body of water. I couldn't really tell. It looked like it was a pond because it looked pretty clearly that there was, they were encircling it completely.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. There was land definitely on the,
on all sides,
the perimeter, right? The whole thing.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. All right. So never mind about that then.
Yeah. Okay. So when Axel listens to this, I guess he'll explain to whatever. We'll,
we'll find out what Zapruder thinks.
Yeah. We got to get him to tweet me.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay. So now, so the way I wrote that, I just said at least one night has passed because I know there's some debate about how long they were on this rock. I really don't think it matters, but I think it's clear that it's been at least one night.
That's fair.
Dies. They burn his body to be sure that he doesn't turn. Jorah and John surmise kind of what we were just talking about killing the Walker and killing the Whites. And Jorah's like, oh, we gotta, you know, go out there and just kill Walkers. And John's like, nah, I'm waiting for Daenerys. And then Beric suggests
who
that
you
he...
notice doesn't kill a fucking Walker. Go ahead.
No. Oh, boy. That he and John should go for the Night King because, as, in Beric's words, he created them all. I mean, as far as this part, it's... I was happy that they had that conversation about the Whites. I think, you know, it seems like a natural conversation that they would have. It feels real. It feels in the moment. But I really don't, I really didn't pull that much from this. And I mean, you know, RIP Thoros, but, you know, he was definitely on my list of expendable characters. Nice knowing you. And that's pretty much it. What do you think?
Yeah. Prune the branch. No, I agree. This conversation made perfect sense in the dumb context it's in.
All right. Yeah.
I don't know what, you know, I'm not sure what the, you know, what Beric's hard on is to link himself to John. I don't think that's really been completely explained yet, but like I said, I feel like they're copying and pasting his dialogue. So, so I don't know that we're ever going to really get that either, you know, but obviously whatever it is, it has more to do with John than Beric.
Yeah. It's like he wants John to hear that. Kill the Night King. Like, it's less about Beric doing it.
Yeah.
It's sort
Bend
of
the
like
knee, kill the Night King. There's a lot of advice for him in this one. Yeah.
And John just happens to be the one hearing it all. Right. Yep. Why don't we tell Tormund to kill the Night King? Aw, the ginger who was promised. I love him.
Oh, man. I know. I was glad he didn't die. Even if it required like 8 or 9 walkers to just weirdly disappear after an edit, I was still glad he didn't die.
I know.
There were like 3 edits like that where, like, you know, he managed to shake off 4 walkers. Anyway, go on.
So now we go to Dragonstone and we see Dany responding to the letter and she leaves on Drogon's back with the other 2 dragons against Tyrion's wishes. Tyrion thinks that it's way too risky. She uses his past advice as reasons to not listen to him and to trust her own instincts. So let me just say this up front. For anybody who doesn't really get the slang of like, yes, queen, slay. Like, when Dany comes out in the coat, the winter look, right?
Ooh,
that's look.
Yes.
L-E-W-K, her look. Right? That is when you say, yes, queen, slay.
That's when
that
it's appropriate.
That is how you do it.
Yes,
yes that is when you use that. My jaw dropped. I can't wait for these talented cosplayers to just like do it, right? Like, this is going to be great.
Yeah. Yeah, there's a lot of fuel for that. For that,
this
that,
season has
Comic-Con fire. Yeah. Yeah. Well, and she's been, correct me if I'm wrong, but she's only worn black this season, right? And then she comes out
lots
in the
of dark colors.
Yeah, I mean, right, like it's been based in, you know, in black, and she comes out in the like off gray kind of, and is that, was I wrong or was that wolf skin? Because it had the colors of wolf fur.
There was like, I'm gonna just say no.
You're gonna go with
no? I have no idea. I'm gonna just say no because I feel like that's like
because fuck
that
this.
She's subtweeting John.
Hold on, we're looking up a picture now. Danny Winter dress back. You people are listening to me Google right now. because the oh god, this is garbage. I don't have time to look for this. I just came up with a bunch of things that weren't what I was looking for. I felt like the back was kind of moved from like a white to a gray, but there was a little bit of like a light brown in there.
Yeah, there was.
Okay, then what was that?
I don't know. We'll have to ask fur. Michelle Clapton. No. Well, isn't that a little aggressive?
She likes him. I mean, you know. Wouldn't you? You never like worn. I guess maybe you wouldn't, but like, you know.
The skin of a guy. I thought.
No, the t-shirt of like a band that, you know, somebody you want to date really likes that band. And you're like, shit, I got an old shirt from that band. I'm going to have to bust it out.
You know what? I'm hanging my head right now because my boyfriend loved Anthony Hardaway from the Orlando Magic.
Okay.
And I got a Shaq jersey.
This, do you see? That she's wearing wolf fur. I'm telling you. You just confirmed it with an Anthony Hardaway reference. You just confirmed it. yes. I loved
it. Wow. Oh, yep. Junior year. Okay. So, I mean, in this section, aside from the fashion.
That was a detour.
I apologize.
That was a detour that ended in Shaquille O'Neal. Oh, I love it. you're the best. You're the fucking best. All right, carry on. I'm going to stop interrupting you.
So, you know, Tyrion is saying, you can't go. You could die. You're fallible. You know, you think because you have three dragons, nothing's going to happen to you is kind of his point. But he wants her to do nothing. And yeah. I thought that was like a little,
yep.
I mean, I get his nervousness, right? Like I get being scared and of course this is a risk but we're at war. And this is like another time where Tyrion, who at some time seems to be full steam ahead, getting things done, you need to be on the throne. And then in other situations, pull back, pull back, pull back, don't do too much. I don't know.
To be fair, the last time he got all aggro, it was a super failure. So he's kind of been, maybe he's still a little bruised from that.
But like he says, you know, like she goes in to do stuff and then he walks through the battlefield and looks super sad about it. They talk about, oh, Cersei's going to lay a trap. And then Daenerys says, are we laying a trap for her? And he's like, oh, we don't want to be deceitful. And I'm like, is he joking? Like, what?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You know, so it's like, dude, are you here to play or not?
Right.
And you're really going to leave Jon and Jorah and like all these people who I thought you would see as valuable to the mission. You're not going to have her at least check on them? My God. Just seems a little insensitive. I don't know.
Well, it seems also just kind of building up this idea that somehow he's wanting to be set up as, you know, able to take over or whatever. You know, I don't know. It didn't make a lot of sense. It seemed more just kind of like flailing than anything else. You know?
Yeah, well, I'm glad she just like stopped for a second and climbed right back up on Drogon. Like, thank you for your input. Let's go.
Right. You're still busting my fucking chops about Randall fucking Tarly. Like, we don't got more important things to do right now. I'm gonna go. I'll be back.
Yeah. That was, for me, that was not a good Tyrion moment. I mean, at least they gave him something to kind of be passionate about. He was acting there, you know, like, instead of just like making quips.
Right.
But I wonder if this will do anything to their relationship. you know, because now she lost a dragon and...
Has anything done anything to their relationship? No.
No, Mike.
No, there has been no motion whatsoever in their relationship. She, you know, has gotten a little more frustrated within this season, and she's been like, maybe you're taking your family side. And this time he was like, I am. So cut the tension in that. You know, I don't really expect it to move their relationship, frankly. I think this was much more about Dany's, like, you know, showing resolve and being the dragon. Like I said, you know, she's been.
Yeah.
That's really, you know, Tyrion is her only real foil in that way. You know, because everybody else is just kind of like, I'm going to go do some ridiculous shit. And she's like, word, me too. And they're like, say word, let's go. You know, so Tyrion's really the only foil she has left to try to slow her down. You know, Jorah used to kind of play that role.
Right. But I guess Barristan too, right? I mean,
right. But, you know, those guys aren't really around to do that, for at least not for that purpose anymore. So there's Tyrion. So, and, you know, I mean, evergreen shout out to Peter Dinklage for, you know, making garbage look real.
Yeah.
I mean, that guy's good, you know. And that's one thing that I always try to remember whenever I'm like, you know, that Dany's just not really a whole lot going on there, you know, is that she is acting against Peter Dinklage for two seasons now. And no chump pulls that off. You don't do that, you know, on your first day out of school. You know, so,
right.
You know, and she, you know, and she did it. You know, I believed her in this scene, even though she was climbing up some sort of like steps,
yeah,
on a green screen somewhere.
Yeah, it probably,
you know,
was just like a stepladder over there.
Well, but that's one thing that I went back and watched, because when you watch her walking up, I don't know how they, you know, did it in the studio or whatever, but if you notice, the second step that she takes is a significantly bigger step than the first one, right? Hmm. So whatever it was that they set up and painted green, they at least took the time to make them different levels, which is how you would think it would look if you were climbing up something natural. You look at bat wings or something like that, you know, the space, they're spaced evenly, but when they are like at rest or, you know, in like various levels of spread, you know, there would be different space. I don't know. It just, I thought that was kind of cool. Cause when I watched it the first time, it just kind of looked that way. I was just like, oh, that, you know, but I thought I was making it up. So I went back and looked and I was like, no, they did. Like, she steps almost twice as high with her second step as she did with her first one. Anyway, that's totally little tiny details that we don't need to, I've already said too many times. Carry on. I'm sorry.
Okay, well, please don't make me. You're gonna make me watch this episode again for these tiny little
don't,
things.
God, don't do that on my account.
Don't do it. Maybe if there's a rewatch, I'll do it. But okay.
All right.
So we're back with our party. They're still on this rock. The Hound, he's bored, I guess. He's cranky, so he decides to torment some zombies, and this totally backfires. The zombies realize that the lake is now frozen solid and they advance. So we get some Tormund drama because he needs to be saved at the last minute. We get a couple red shirt deaths. And just when it seems all is lost, we get three fire-breathing dragons, courtesy of Daenerys Targaryen. Rhaegal and Viserion are pretty much taking out White's Drogon lands to get the crew loaded on the back. But in the distance, we see the Night King grab, I guess what we can call an ice spear, and launches it up and kills Viserion. Let me just say that I feel like... Like, I get they had to have the zombies realize the lake was frozen somehow, but it kind of makes me disappointed in the Hound that he would do something like that. But, okay, fine.
I liked it. I mean,
you
it
did.
Made sense to me. Yeah, it made sense to me that he's restless.
He's just cranky. He's just
dude,
like,
I can't. I don't do well at sitting still. I totally felt, I recognized that moment in myself, I guess.
Okay. All right. I'll take it. So I was truly scared when Tormund was in danger. I thought he was going to die. Like, they got me on that one.
Yep.
I thought he was going to die, and I was so upset. Okay, so I'm just going to move on. So I'm glad he's still alive. I guess the big part is that the Night's King is savage, right? Like, super strong, accurate as hell. And just the sight of Viserion, A, bleeding, you know, in a tailspin through the air, and then slowly falling into the water, or sort of like dropping into the water. That looked so real. I was just kind of blown away with the visuals of that whole death.
Oh. Exceptional, yeah. And, you know, just the position that he was in. And did you see, I think somebody on, I got to start writing down, because I just am like, somebody on the call in. Somebody on the call in, I'll do the thing I just complained about, said that the spear hit him like more in the base of his neck. Because initially it kind of looked like it hit him in the same place that the spear hit Balerion, right? That the spear that Bronn shot, like where it looked kind of like it was more in his shoulder, right?
Drogon,
thank you. Sorry.
Oh, okay.
I did say
Balerion.
No, like, I did say, yes, you were, that is all based on what I said. That was the correct interpretation. What I meant was the arrow that hit Drogon in the shoulder. Okay, and it looked like it hit the same place. But if you notice, this time, fire, like there was fire and blood squirting out of Viserion. And if you go back and look, somebody pointed out that it actually hit him in the base of the neck as opposed to in the shoulder. So it would, it's like it hit a vein, right? But also would have opened up. I mean, I don't know, like, where the fire lives, you know, like, I don't know. I think George can just make it up, right? But the idea being basically that it kind of punctured a hole in the fire delivering mechanism.
I did notice the fire shootout.
Awesome.
I just thought it was like trying
Wow.
All right.
Was so good.
All right. I'm going to rewatch this episode. I'm just going to have my finger on the button jumping forward when I need to.
And you know, I thought it was cool, but then when I went back because I watched the episode again right before we recorded, after I had listened to the fan call-in, and so of course I was looking for it when I went back, and it, like you said, it looked really great. And then of course, you know, Dragon lands on that side. I keep calling him he, but do we ever
know
the sex of
gender.
The dragons?
They don't have gender. They can like switch, I think.
Nice.
Like many reptiles can do
nice.
That.
Nice.
So.
Oh, what fun. They could accessorize in ways that, you know, only boy dragons can't. So what do you call it then? You just call it by its name, Viserion. Right?
Yeah.
So
yeah.
The way that Viserion landed essentially on the injury, I thought was a really cool way to do it too.
And that's why his jaw was kind of like jacked up when they pull him out. You see it
because especially for something that's flying, whichever wing is disabled, that's the side that's going to sink first. Right. Because the other side, the wing that's not disabled is still going to be not carrying, but is still going to be, you know, interacting with the air. And so it would sink to one side at first. And, you know, it's a short effect, right? Because once you lose one wing, you pretty much lose it, you know, but it's long enough to turn it to that side. So I thought that was like a really, really fascinating attention to detail. I don't think I'm heavy lifting. I think all that's physics.
No. It just looks good. it looked great. I mean, you understand why it all happened or not, I just, you know what I'm looking forward to now that I'm thinking about it, that the visual effects reel that they always put out after
the
season,
yeah,
where you get to see the everything come together. That's going to be amazing.
Yeah, that's going to be cool.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, some neat choices in there. Some cool choices in there.
As soon as Viserion, everybody realizes, like, oh, crap. I mean, people are just at a standstill at that point. But then we see that the Night King is reaching for another ice spear.
Yeah.
So Jon realizes that Daenerys has to go. He is somewhat separated from the group at this time because he's trying to keep the whites away so Jorah and all of them can load up and get on Drogon. He tells them to leave. Daenerys clearly does not want to, but she doesn't want to lose another dragon and the whole purpose behind this. So she flies off. Jon ends up in the water after fighting some more whites. He manages to get out and he's in big trouble again until Benjen shows up to save him and give him a horse so he can ride to Eastwatch. I didn't love this whole thing. I would say I really didn't like the Benjen thing. The whole, like, you don't need me, blah, blah, blah. Like, I don't know. It just seemed a little too heroic. Like, it's his deal, and I get it, but it was, like, a lot. And then he ends up in the water, which is, like, a lot. For him to pull himself out, and, like, and then Benjen, I feel like, out of nowhere, it didn't mean anything to me. I didn't feel... Oh my God, Benjen! I was just kind of like, oh, really? Okay, this is what we're doing. All right. And then
stop to take a piss on the way to wherever he was going, he would be there right on time.
Yeah.
But he's always like just a piss worse late. It just
Poor Hodor, right? We could have used you 15 minutes ago.
Yeah.
And then Benjen, I guess Benjen was just done with this like half-life business. You know what? I think that's what Benioff says in the after, that he's just like, whatever. But why write dialogue that says there's no time when there is time? Just have him say something else.
Why say I've never seen snow before if you're going to have to run through a fuck ton of snow? Why say that? Like, why
just
say there's no time?
Say something
because
else.
He said there's no time, and then we spent a minute, a full POV characters, sad themed music, death. Like, you know what I'm saying? Like, he got like a full death of a POV character with his own song. And all of these like close up shots, and you watch John watching him go down. And what the fuck? What? Like, I don't. First of all, why on earth do you think I care enough about Benjen to give him all of that heavyweight drama as he's dying? You've given me no reason to care. He pops up Deus Ex Benjen. He shows up out of nowhere, right? And just like does one little thing and then just leaves again. Is the same thing where you were complaining about how thin the Citadel was. You know, we're complaining like all these different things where it's like, and then after that, you give me all of this extra time when he said that. Come on, man. It just, that whole thing.
Right,
was not,
right. Like, if he's going to say there's no time, then make it a close shave. Like, I want one of those whites scratching the horse. You know what I'm saying? Like, they're
on you. Because
I
care about John. I don't care about Benjen. I mean, like, and, you know, the moment where John is like, Uncle Benjen, I was like, oh, yes, because I know John cares about Benjen. So get him on the goddamn horse and get up north and let him tell you a story about the Night's King or something. Like, what are we doing?
I don't know.
This is another one of these questions where is this the way it's going to happen in the book? Now, I think that this is much harder to speculate on the death of an individual character then is, you know, the whole Suicide Squad going north, which seems like something that, you know, would be very hard for them to invent for the show if it weren't really there. The Binge and Death, I think, is much harder to, you know, because the way they, I mean, you know, Stannis is still alive in the book, right? Like, the way they kill individuals, you know what I'm saying?
Did you see what I texted? I think it was last night, where I was watching the after the episode, and they were calling him Cold Hands. I'm like, what?
Yeah.
I'm like, right. What? Why That's are they calling the him that? So part of me is wondering, did they slip up and do they think, like, is Cold Hands going to intervene in some way in the book?
I don't think they slipped up. I think that they have been assuming all along that he's Cold Hands, and have been assuming that any of us who know who that is have been assuming that he is as well.
But they have to know that we all got confirmation that it's not, that he's not. Like... My guys, we...
Yeah. So it makes no sense. I don't know. Okay. I mean, if it's, right. it's really hard to say that that is like a mindless mistake at this point. Because it was more than once, right?
I think so, yeah. He said it twice, at least.
So it's hard to imagine that that's just like a mindless mistake. Like, that's some sort of a misinterpretation or something that hasn't really been explained, but ultimately doesn't matter because there's not that many of us that are going to raise a stink about it.
Well, I imagine that it's a mistake in the sense that as the person who crafts the overarching story, in his mind, that's Cold Hands. But the people who are like finalizing the script... make sure that it says Benjen right. and not Cold Hands.
Totally possible. And you know, that's one of the things that like Axel was saying as part of kind of his reaction to all the complaints is like, this is a massive thing. And you write a book and then somebody else writes a script and then somebody else goes and takes the pictures and then somebody else sits down and puts them in order, you know, and what you get once you put them in order is not the same thing as what you got when it was on a piece of paper. You know, and that is an excellent point as far as how little things like that happen. And I think what you're saying is that is one of those things that, you know, there's somebody on, you know, there's a script supervisor who makes sure it says Benjen. And that's different than what the person who wrote it down was thinking. You know, that is how that actually works. So that's the best answer I've heard so far.
Yay. Okay. Yeah, because I was really curious.
Well, it's much better than, you know, this is, I mean, for all of the solid points that Donald made, you know, he goes back to this like, oh, they're just fucking lazy and rich and they don't give a shit. It's just like, that is not the, that's nonsense. You know, it's not, you know, rich, sure, lazy, maybe, but there's, you know, 1,000 people working on this show. Right. And not all of them are lazy. Not all of them are rich either. Right. I mean, it just kind of like that's just a real substandard kind of answer as opposed to, you know, there's a lot of people working on it and not everybody agrees on every single thing, you know.
A lot of cooks in the kitchen.
Yep.
Okay, so let's get back to the show. Eastwatch. Beric and Tormund are helping the Hound get the White on a little boat. So
all
I
right,
guess
but hold on a
out.
Second. No. We're not there yet. I'm sorry. I don't mean to interrupt, but I need to I need to make two more points.
Two? Okay.
Maybe three. One, I was not going to talk about this, but Axel asked me to. And because Axel is, you know, the Night's King of podcast Winterfell, I do what he asked me to do, which is to bring up the blue color of the eyes. I guess I could talk about this at the very, very end with the dragon. But there was one thing that I noticed where he was, because he was like, you know, you were right about Danny's eyes, blah, blah, blah. Okay, so I was going to leave it alone. But as I was doing the rewatch in the scene where Jon is standing there right before the dragons come, right? There's a shot where he is looking down over the ledge of the Rockies on right after one of the red shirts fell off. and he like barely tried to catch him. Come on.
Right.
I'd like you to try a little harder for me, right? I'm from the north. But he, so he, and then he's looking down as they're coming up, and it's very distinct. It is white snow as far as the eye can see, and then the whole field of snow, especially right there on the rock, turns the White Walker eye blue. And then the shot turns to, you know, turns basically up towards John, and he looks over his head, and here comes a fire breathing dragon. These things are small and subtle, but like, if the idea that that color was a reflection in her eye from the beautiful sky on whatever beach in Croatia they were shooting on or whatever, there's no way for me to say that's not true, right? But if you watch this shit, man, I'm telling you, it's impossible not to see the blue color cover that field of snow. And that's digital. That's a choice. That's not a reflection in somebody's eye. So anyway, Axel asked me to mention that. I bring it up. I'm happy to bring it up. Now, my primary problem, and this is what I was saying about, you know, it seems like it would be hard for this to not be in the books. One of the things that you learn when you're learning how to tell stories is to not craft solutions to your problems that undercut the problems. I mentioned this before, right? And this scene is the greatest example of this problem that has been in this season, at least so far, which is that if Danny can just fly a dragon up there and kill all these things, then why did all these people go? Why didn't she just get on a, you see the scene with her and John pets the dragon, John gets on a dragon, they go up there, they sit on a rock, they look down, they see it, he's like, see, I told you, they're all dead. Right? And then they just go the hell back to Dragonstone. Like, I would rather see them in Dragonstone feeding each other grapes, having a three-way with Missandei, than this whole nonsense that they just went on. Right? No, and I don't want to see that. That would be nonsense, but I would be able to absorb that easier than this whole stupid fucking trek they went on. And then when the solution is Danny flies up there with a dragon to rescue them all I can say is, why did they even walk? Why did they, like, how did they get there? Did they take a boat? Why even take a boat? It's like, you've undercut your own, the problem that you set up with your solution. There was no reason that had to happen. If there was some other thing that would have happened when they were there, that could not have happened any other way. Right? Now, what would that thing be? He kills the dragon. Okay, right. That's what you need for him. That's what this whole thing is about, right? Is they get a dragon. That's what this is really for. This isn't to convince Danny, because there were other ways of convincing Danny. Cersei doesn't have an army. You don't really need to convince Cersei, right? She certainly doesn't have fire-breathing dragons. She's got a Qyburn, and that's pretty good. But it's not nearly as good as the dragons, right? So what you need, what you're really doing here is getting a dragon to the Night's King. Okay, so then John gets on one of them. They all go up there. He still kills one. Like, you can achieve the exact same thing that you need to achieve without undercutting everything else that you're doing. So if the point is just to get these guys together and go, all right, that's cool. But that's some fantasy land. That's like fantasy story shit, you know, like this group of heroes trudging through the snow, you know, and that's not like, this show has not been about that. There's other ways to do that. There's, you know, you really want to get all these guys together in the same room? There has to be a better way. Or you can just split them up. You already know the Hound and Beric and all those guys are up there, so maybe they talk Tormund into going ranging. And while they're out ranging, they see the dragons, and they're like, what the hell? And then they go back. I don't know, something. You know what I mean? Like, some way that you can kind of get both, but you don't have to set up this big stupid thing for no reason. Anyway.
Right. Once they know Daenerys and have established some trust with her, the fact that they don't use her and the dragon to accomplish this from the beginning is hard to believe, knowing how dangerous the trip's going to be. It's just silly. So I do agree with you there. I have to say, there's another moment that I think you're saying the solution undercuts the problem, mm-hmm. where when Thoros gets hurt by the bear, and his wounds are probably fatal. If they just let him die and let him turn, they can just leave right then and take his ass back.
Nice, right?
But they can't because they need them to keep going. So we have the flaming sword, close the wound up just enough for him to keep going so they can have the big fight.
And then not only that, but you are not bringing back a faceless white. You're bringing back Thoros of freaking Mir, dude.
Like, right.
This guy was famous all over Westeros. You know, like this guy was, you know, you take Thoros to Cersei. I mean, Jaime's going to for sure know who that was.
Yeah.
Jaime, was it Pyke? Mm-hmm. Right. I mean, so see, I hadn't thought of that. And that is yet another excellent answer, you know, to solve this problem without making us, you know, the idea of like insulting the audience's intelligence, like there is such a thing as doing that. And this does not count as that to me. This is just, you know, kind of bending to fantasy elements in a way that he just hasn't. And I put it on George.
But you don't think this might be evidence that this is not in the book in this way?
I mean, it could be, but it doesn't, like, it's irrelevant what way it is in the book. If this meetup of heroes and they walk above the wall and they get saved by Dany, if any version of that framework is the way this happens in the book, I don't see how it won't be very disappointing. And I don't see how they put this in the show if it's not in the book. And you know, come on, you've read these goddamn books. It's going to be 500 pages at least of this shit between when they're sitting in the war room in Dragonstone and they're like, we're going to do it. And Dany shows up and John falls in the water. That's at least 500 pages. And it's going to be, I will be reading it thirstily, waiting for the moment that makes it all make sense to me.
Well,
but so
the best
far, I don't
news
see how.
Is there was no food, so that's out, and there are no ships. He loves to list
yes
food and ships.
And boats, that's true.
So at least it'll be narrative, right? It won't just be a freaking
this is true
list.
This is true.
Oh my God.
Fair.
Reading that Blackwater section. I'm like, is it how many boats? Why?
But ultimately, Blackwater made sense. And so you read it.
Yes.
You know what I mean? And so you
I
read
did
it. You know?
Yes. And for trivia, I tried to memorize as many of those ship names as I could. And there wasn't a damn question about it. Not one.
Oh, man. That is some real meditative work right there.
I should probably write trivia questions because I think about the most evil stuff. Cause, like,
there
that's how I study because I'm a teacher, I guess. So I'm like, what would I write a question about?
See, that's a good idea. If you wrote a trivia thing that tripped up a couple of real experts, you know, they would appreciate that.
Hmm.
If you can get Susan and who else?
Kelly.
And, you know, if we can get a handful of our people and they miss 2 out of 10, like, you're a master. That's what I would think. That's it. We're going to have to start an off-season trivia.
I know. I love trivia. Right? Yeah, but I could write questions for sure.
See?
All right. Wow. Okay, so we took a detour.
Okay, there's just one other question.
One
no,
more.
I'll save this for the very end. It's something that another thing that Axel wanted us to talk about, but we'll save it for the end. Go ahead.
Okay. Eastwatch. Okay, so Beric and Tormund are sending the Hound off. He has the white, and they're going to head to the ship. Dany is waiting, looking over the wall. Doesn't want to leave yet because she's hoping John comes and surely at the last moment he arrives just in time to make the ship to King's Landing. You know, I mean, this was pretty straightforward. Jorah's ready to go. And Dany's like, no, just a moment. I guess this was to kind of show us that she cares a little more about John, you know, like this isn't just about the battle or having a fighter, but she was maybe emotionally invested in having him there. What do you think?
Yeah, well, I think so too. And this was the first moment when I was super disappointed about it because I thought she was mourning her dead dragon. And no,
yeah,
she's waiting on this short moron. Oh my God. This is like the idea that she is, you know, more upset. Anyway, this is the first, and then they didn't make that better as the episode carried on.
So I definitely was waiting for the morning of Viserion, and it didn't, or at least it didn't come in the way that I wanted it or I expected it. So I'm kind of with you there, but, you know, a lot of this last minute stuff is kind of annoying, but I guess that's just a small thing. It's not enough to, you know, change my mind about things, but.
Also, that's been consistent, and like we've already decided to forgive that a long time ago.
It's like, you know, just have the guy show up. Like, it's fine.
Right.
It's fine.
Yep.
We know he's not, like, we know that he's not going to be right. over, like, behind the wall. Like, it's just, all right, anyway. Yeah. So now we're on the ship. John,
you know what also could have worked super cool, though? Something like that happens, only he gets picked up by the Hound and all those guys who are ranging above the wall for no good goddamn reason. Because he's a, like, you know what I mean? Here we are again where, like, you've just got another moment where you could have worked this whole thing in a way that just made so much more sense. Anyway, I swear that's my last one. I swear it's my last one.
Don't swear, because you know what?
Good advice.
We have three more scenes at least, so.
All right.
Yeah, and the Winterfell scene's coming, so like let's. So John gets stripped, and Dany is able to see the many wounds, and she's kind of looking over him, and you kind of see her realizing that, you know, he did take a knife to the heart, definitely. And I think she's starting to think he's special, I guess I'll use that word. I don't think there's that much more to it. Did you pick up anything else?
No, I was just dumb. You know, the idea that I was just annoyed by the idea that she was more worried about him than the dragons. And, you know, she could have been a little more broken up for my taste. She's gonna be a little too relieved for my taste.
Aww.
So.
All right. Winterfell. So Sansa.
Like, that has nothing to do with her and him. God, I'm so sorry.
No.
That has nothing to do with her and him. That has everything to do with her and the dragons for me. You know, this is not a, like, I don't want them to be having a romantic thing. This is not about that. This is about.
Well, there's not even
a
line.
The only thing she's ever cared about. Right.
I would expect there to be a line or two or three next episode. I mean, she has to, right? I mean, like, if she doesn't, that's an oversight of the writing for sure. Because there's no reason for her to just get over it that quickly. So we have Sansa snooping in Arya's room. She finds the faces. Arya walks in. Sansa questions her, and Arya only offers these sort of weird, vague explanations. She tries to play the game of faces while Sansa's kind of just begging for answers. Arya holds the dagger towards Sansa and is walking towards her and saying threatening things, but ultimately she flips the dagger around and hands it to Sansa. The first time I saw this, I definitely was like, what the hell just happened? On future watches, it was kind of like, well, I am guessing that, you know, Arya trusts Sansa enough for her to have the dagger and is basically saying, like, we're still on the same team, but we're not the same person. I don't know. I'm really struggling with this entire storyline, and I'd really like to hear what you think of it to try to maybe help me swallow this a little better.
I mean, you know, like I said before, I'm willing to give this storyline another episode. I was much less frustrated with it than the other one. I think it's weird, but I also took her turning the knife and giving it to Sansa as a statement of trust, in the same way that Sansa sending Brienne to King's Landing was a sign of her trust of Arya, that Arya then handed. Now, of course, just because she has a knife in her hand doesn't necessarily mean Sansa's going to cut anybody up, right? It seems obviously that Arya has those skills where Sansa doesn't, but I just took that as a moment of trust, and the rest of the stuff around it, you know, just peacock feathers, you know what I mean? just kind of, you know. And I think that she was hoping that basically the words, "I was training to be a faceless man," I think she was kind of bummed that didn't mean a little more to Sansa than it did. She was kind of trying to, you know, make the point of what exactly she's not just talking, you know. She really, like, when she said training, like, well, what does that mean? You know, it can mean anything, you know what I mean? But so when she said faceless man, she's like, what is that? You know, I mean, it's kind of hard to explain.
Right. And she's like, oh, we wanted to be other people. And as she's walking closer, and it's like, all I would need is your face. I'm like, oh, God. Like, what do you want from this conversation here?
What are you hoping to achieve with that, right? It's not really a whole lot of carrot there. It's just a whole lot of stick.
Yeah. Right. It's like, geez, Arya. So, you know, as I'm trying to, you know, do my heavy lifting, as I like to do, one thing I was thinking about was that, you know, does the show want us to maybe not love Arya so much? You know, so many people love her, and she's allowed to kill people, and well, it's totally fine.
She's really not had much. We have had no conflict with the people she's fought so far.
Yeah, you know? It's like they set her up to only kill people that we can pretty much agree are objectively terrible,
or at least have done her harm.
Yeah, you know? So maybe we need to, as an audience, we need to start seeing her for someone that's probably a little damaged. I mean, maybe a sociopath in our terms, or, you know, this is not a person who's healthy.
We've not had any reason to question her judgment so far. And, you know, here we are now for the first time questioning her judgment, really, more than anything else. We've not really questioned her killing because we're not questioning her judgment. So, you know, I like this turn with her. I don't know. I mean, it seems extra creepy for some reason I don't entirely understand. But like I said, I'm willing to give this one till the next. I don't think there's going to be a high five moment, you know.
No.
But I did see two moments of trust between the two people in this episode, you know, that suggested at least that Arya's not going to kill her, because I don't need them to be friends. I just, that's a dumb death for Sansa. You know, maybe they do something great with it, but I'm having a hard time picturing how she feeds Ramsay to dogs and then gets killed by Arya. Like, that just...
No, I don't think that they'll do that. One would kill the other. Oh, no. Not at this point. I mean, no. Donald would go insane with his unearned ranting. Unearned! Okay, so we can leave Winterfell.
Not really on a high note, just on a, like, no. You know, wait and see, you know what I
yes.
mean?
Yes,
like,
and I'm also willing to wait till that next episode, because I do feel like there's an explanation there. I just hope I like the explanation, you know what I mean? I hope it makes sense to me. I don't want it to be like, you know, this whole, oh, you thought you were seeing this, but it's really this, and they undo right. everything they just did. I really don't want to see that. Like, it needs to be just as complicated as it's been so far.
Don't give me a solution that undercuts the problem. Yup.
Okay, so we're on the ship. John's on a ship with Targaryen sails. Wink, wink. So he wakes up and Dany's watching over him. He apologizes and expresses remorse. It seems to be remorse about the entire thing, the dragon, the mission. She holds his hand. Dany pledges to fight with him. After that, John bends the knee as best as he can. And she reaches out to him again. And he says some very kind words to her. She tries to pull her hand away, but he holds on a bit, and they kind of share some eye contact, and this is probably the first moment where I felt like there's a real connection between the two. And it seems like she realizes they're having a moment and she leaves.
Yep.
Yeah, so I mean, I feel like a moment like this that's pretty chaste, but still, you know, meaningful, sort of like those beginnings of a relationship, should have probably happened a little bit sooner. But this one sold me, so I'm glad it happened, so I wouldn't be kind of like rolling my eyes and complaining forever. And I like that he immediately apologized. Mm-hmm. And it almost seems like he was more upset about the damn dragons than she was.
Yep.
And this is the moment where I wanted her to get a little emotional about the dragons. Like, even if she stops herself from getting too emotional, you know, like I wanted to see something here in this moment. So it sounds like you agree.
Yep. And it was weird that there was almost more of it coming from him. Yeah. And, you know, this is one scene that I didn't particularly like the writing for her, but I thought he, because, you know, I was saying, oh, John, you know, was too busy thinking about how many men he's got up there to be able to lay it down with her. You know, he's distracted. You know what I mean? He's not right. And I felt like, you know, after you've fought all these people and you know, half drowned and saw your half dead uncle and then wrote, you know what I mean? And then now you're frozen to the horse. And like, I feel like that's a good moment to like maybe reflect a little bit on, you know, your last week or 2 days or 12 hours or whatever it
was.
We're
not allowed
to, you know,
talk time,
no problem, no problem. You know, I felt like that. I actually, that moment actually played for me from his side. I just really wanted her to be a little less comforted by his presence in relationship to the dragon, frankly. So, but otherwise, the scene was just, you know, what you needed and expected the scene to be.
Yeah, I thought it was a good one. Okay, so now we are back and we see some really big chains.
Mm-hmm.
And they are pulling a really big dragon out of the water. And then our Night King places his hand onto Viserion, and we get a blue dragon eye. Okay, this was big. In terms of kind of evening the playing field a little bit, in terms of what does this mean for bringing winter? And, you know, does this dragon have different abilities now? Because, you know, is there going to be ice coming out of it? Is there still going to be fire? Like, I'm really excited about the ice dragon. How about you?
This is an opportunity for me to, like, you know, undercut my own argument with my solution and say, like, this was really cool. I loved it. And I didn't give a shit where the chains came from.
Me either.
I thought it was awesome how it was done. I thought it was cool as shit seeing the dragon come out of the water. And I also really like the idea that they have a dragon. I love the idea that we don't know what comes out of its face. You know what I mean? Like, I really enjoyed this part of it quite a bit, actually, and it, which is kind of part of why on the rewatch I got so frustrated by all the other stuff. You know, it was just because of how much I liked this. I liked this idea overall of him getting the dragon, and it looked cool as shit. Once again, the dragon graphics are amazing. You know, and then you get the eyeball.
Perfect. Perfect ending.
Sweet. It was cool as shit.
Yeah. I mean, I have nothing bad to say about it. I mean, I don't care. I mean, yes, I was kind of like, oh, these chains. Where? And then it's like, who cares? I don't care.
Yeah.
Small things.
And I don't know. That was the least of my concerns as far as that moment goes. You know. So this was the thing that Axel asked me about, is there's been a lot of chatter about the Night's King being a Brandon Stark, right? And you know, it's been pointed out that there have been other Brandon Starks, you know, throughout history of Westeros and so on and so forth, and could one of them be the Night's King? This was, and Axel wanted us to talk about this. So what I said is that the only Brandon Stark in history that we have really any kind of even partial information on is Bran the Builder. Bran the Builder is the one who built the Wall and Winterfell. He built the Wall and with, you know, with help from the Children of the Forest and giants and stuff like that. And so that's how it's so big, but also how it's got the magic in it. But then he built Winterfell just kind of like that was his like retirement project after he got done with the Wall, right? But none of that was done until after the end of the Long Night, which means the first defeat of the Night's King. So I don't see how Bran the Builder can be the Night's King and then beat himself and then not be himself anymore and then build the Wall. So, it, you know, I don't know that we don't know that the Night's King wasn't a Stark, you know, or an ancestor of the Starks, but he's not Bran the Builder. And right. We don't really know any other Brans.
Yeah, I mean, as far as being an ancestor of the Starks, I think that's probably very likely, given...
But based on what? Just the fact that it was so long ago.
Yeah, and the location and how, at least in the books, they kind of talk about how they have a connection to the First Men and blah, blah, blah. And
But that's the thing. The First Men... Okay, so the Starks are known to be descendant from the First Men, but there's no... There's no family titles among the First Men. The family titles don't come in until the Andals arrive, right? And then they end up basically fighting the First Men. And so essentially everybody above Winterfell, you know, all the First Men who are left above Winterfell that never actually get taken over by the Andals, they kind of then, that's when you start to see the formation of the family names, right? But this whole thing was happening before the formation, before the Andals invaded, because the children were fighting the First Men. Right? Correct me if I'm...
That sounds so correct. What about when Bran is seeing through the Weirwood tree in the Godswood at Winterfell, and he's watching like those really old rituals, like blood sacrifice and stuff?
Yep.
I mean, is that... Because I'm almost feeling like that would
That's
be
That's Winterfell. That would have been post.
But is the castle there or is just that tree there?
Bran the Builder built the castle. Oh, in the flashbacks. You're saying the flashbacks would have gone back before. That makes total
before
sense.
The
Absolutely.
Castle. So
Absolutely.
If those people were physically there, I mean, I guess I could say that those people, they may not have called themselves Stark, but they probably... gave
but
birth
in,
to the
in
people.
The story that we're obsessed with here, you would think they would be right. They're not going to be like some other. They're the Lukes. Like they're yeah. Okay, that makes sense. That makes sense. So he could be a Stark, but the only Bran that we know of is Bran the Builder, and that he's not Bran the Builder, and he's not Brandon Stark. Now Brandon Stark, right? I haven't seen any coherent explanations of how the Brandon Stark in Winterfell is also. Have you seen any? I coherent.
I saw the Twitter
is an important
moment,
word.
And I went through all the tweets, and it just didn't sell. I just don't feel like the evidence is there to say that
nothing,
he's the Night King.
Yeah, and there's nothing in the books that would suggest it, and in fact. All the evidence that we have from the books and the history and lore and stuff don't point to that at all.
And I mean, if Bran is Bran the Builder, then this book series seriously could have been two books. Like if we're that simple, right?
For
like
real.
If there are so many Brandons, Johns, Aegons, like,
for real.
Which is great because that's how life is, right? We name people after, you know, people we respect and whatever. So I like that. But, like, come on. I don't know.
I feel like this is something that I didn't come up with, but I don't know how long ago I heard it or have any idea where. So, but that it is possible that the Night's King is actually one of Bran the Builder's siblings, right? So would be a Stark. But that the original Long Night was essentially a Stark civil war, you know, and that the children would have turned somebody who was already powerful. And so maybe like they turned Rob, right? But then all the living people were like, fuck that, I'm going to hang out with John.
Yeah.
You know? Right. But it was essentially kind of a Stark sibling war. And so Bran, who became Bran the Builder, was never really expected to be, you know, a guy who was going to have a lineage. He was more just, you know, kind of the third brother or something like that. But by the end of the Stark Civil War, he was clearly the good guy, and he was also the one who won, right? So
that's the legacy. He built the castle.
Is that like a common thing? Is that something I made up? Is that like one thing I read on a blog 8 years ago? Have you heard that before?
I've never heard that one, but I mean, see, I think it's interesting to have it be a relative in the sense that you have to sort of reckon with your past and see how these decisions have repercussions and the things that we do matter. And, you know, to me, that's more meaningful than like a secret identity.
Right. And also the Starks have been pretty freaking squeaky clean, you know, as far. Right. And so it would not be such a, you know, that would also be a nice kind of undertone, is to realize that even the squeaky clean, you know, gray on white Starks are actually like, you know, kind of in the way that Baelish started the whole War of Five Kings. This whole thing goes back to, you know, a sibling rivalry between these idiots. Like, I think that would just be a fun, you know, I like that conceptually, you know?
Yeah. I mean, look, when Bran saw all of that stuff happen by the Weirwood tree, that was probably the most interesting stuff I had read in a while from that, you know, from the series, because it gave them so much depth. And I wanted to know the history and the story, and why are they like, I don't care that you're doing a blood sacrifice. I think it's cool. Tell me why. Like, I'll respect your customs. Just tell me all about it. This is interesting. Where I could totally see Ned being like embarrassed and whatever, and like doesn't want to talk about it.
Yep. I mean, I'm pretty culturally relativistic. Not totally. But pretty, you know, I mean, I will hear you. I will be fascinated by your stories for a while, at least, before I get all judgy.
Yeah, just tell me about it. Yeah, I want to. Oh, man, I really hope we get some details about all of that, going through all the different eras and the different weapons. And that was just like a really great section of writing. Yeah. George.
Okay, so here's one quick question. Was there any indication to you that anybody took any goddamn dragon glass above the wall?
Yeah.
There was. Oh,
yes.
Give it to me.
Jorah,
salve
absolutely. Had two.
Okay.
Absolutely. And I can't imagine that he would be the only one, because that's just silly.
So, because I wondered where his came from. I didn't really pay enough attention. But you think those were dragon glass?
Yeah. They were like short daggers. And like, why would he knows how to use a sword. So for him to prefer to use like do up close work, it had to have been because it was the dragon glass. Yeah.
Well, I did notice in one of the overhead shots when the dragon's flying over and you're looking down at the rock and John is standing there and the white is laying on the floor next to him with the bag on his head. Right. And next to him, next to the white on the ground, is what actually looked like a super crude version of, you remember Ariohota's like staff with the big, awesome, super cool blade on the end of it, you know?
Yeah,
This
his spouse.
Like, baby, right? This looked like a super crude version of that, like made out of, you know, just like basically a stick and a dragon glass blade. And it was laying on the ground next to the white in that overhead shot. And I definitely had this moment where I was like, we couldn't have seen like one red shirt swing that thing. You know what I mean? Like, it was weird to see it there, but to never actually see it in action.
Didn't Tormund have something like that? Like a stick basically, and then like a curved blade.
But his looked pretty much like a, you know, a classic free folk, you know, iron
axe. Or whatever.
Yeah, okay. His looked much more traditional to his folks. But I didn't, you know, I'm basing the idea that the thing that I saw in the overhead shot as dragon glass on the fact that it looked kind of, you know, it was like a darker black like the Valyrian steel is pretty much looks like steel, mm-hmm. you know, and that was black. And Tormund's thing was kind of a middle ground. But I actually think what that is the difference between what they would call in the book castle forged, right? In the first couple of books, Free Folk's talking about castle forged steel all the time, right? So I think that was actually the difference between castle forged steel and whatever garbage Tormund is carrying around.
Oh, bless him. I love him.
Bless him. He's good at killing people, even with shitty weapons.
Aw, so. He's so cute. Wow. I follow that actor on Instagram. He has such a great personality.
Kissed by fire, baby.
All right, so we made it. We have a really long one next week. Oh, my goodness.
Good Lord of mercy. It's not my fault this podcast is so long. The show is long.
How's yeah,
that?
Sure.
Does that sound good? All right, good. All right, so this episode was pretty crappy, but there was some pretty interesting things, and here we go for next week, right? I mean, we'll see what happens. Has it leaked yet?
No, not that I've heard of.
Shit, somebody got fired. It's Wednesday, and it hasn't been leaked yet. Right on. We'll have to ask Donald. All right. I don't really have anything else. The things I didn't like, I think I've well spelled out. I'm scared for Winds of Winter now, and I never was before Sunday. And all that said, I'm going to watch every freaking minute of anything they make. So my complaints are irrelevant because they're not listening, but I still feel better after talking to you.
Oh, good. All right. Yeah, you were pretty wound up.
As a person, not about the show, as a person. As a human being, I feel better, but
okay.
This garbage. All right. So is there anything else? Is there anything I missed? Do you want to tell us about some amazing guacamole you had this week? Or
it's so funny you say that. I hate avocados.
Oh, so you didn't have amazing guacamole this week.
No, but I watched my friend make some. She loves it and she's fantastic at making it. So I hear. Yeah, so I watched someone take 5 avocados and make a huge dish of it.
Oh.
Yes.
Okay, so you don't like the flavor or you don't like what do you like about it?
The texture. It's so bland and just mush. I don't like it.
But the
of avocados. Like if I'm drinking, right, and there's chips and guacamole, I can stomach it, but to just eat avocado, no.
Wow.
Doesn't taste good. The texture is like mashed potatoes. Not into it.
So you don't like mashed potatoes either?
No, I love mashed potatoes, but they taste like butter and salt. So
right.
Avocados don't.
So it's a texture that you associate with a flavor. And
it's just mush. It doesn't taste like anything to me.
All right. Well.
And I'm on a high-fat diet, and like I wish
you would
I
like to be
them.
Able to eat avocados. Yeah.
Yeah, it's perfect, and I can't. I just no.
My
and then they're so
I
temperamental. They're like good for 3 days.
That's
like,
true
I can't.
Too.
I cannot.
That's true too. That's true too. My best friend when I was a kid was a guy named Silvino, and his mother was an amazing cook, and she's from North Mexico, and she made tamales all the time, and it's just unbelievable food, and I didn't know that everybody didn't just eat that stuff all the time. Like I just,
no.
You know, you're like 5 or 6 years old. You think the whole world is just like your life, right? You know, the crash between when I was like 9 or 10 and Silvino moved away, and when I was like 19 or 20 and I learned how to make guacamole on my own. I'm not over that disappointment in my life. So,
oh yeah.
All right.
Cause like what
this
in the last
been,
5 years?
Podcast Guacafell. I'm sorry, what were you gonna say?
I forgot you were still recording. Oh my god.
Of course I'm still recording. We talked about this terrible show and complained and whinged for 2 hours. Now you know we get a little guacamole story. It's
okay. My god. Okay.
Alright. Tracy doesn't want to talk about guacamole anymore, so I guess we're gonna go. This has been Podcast Winterfell. Thank you very much for listening. If you're still on at this point in the show, man, we love you.
Bless.
Matt here. You know, I used to say that I would never, ever monetize Podcast Winterfell because really I didn't need to. I had plenty of money to do it, and it was my passion. But the guys from the DVR Podcast Network, who have taken over Podcast Winterfell for me, decided to do a Patreon page because they're giving you more content each week than I have ever given you on Podcast Winterfell. And I really appreciate that the effort that they've gone through to do that, including interviews, including 3 podcasts a week just covering the show, and maybe even more with a feedback podcast here or there as well. So you're getting a whole lot of content, and that's why it's worth it to go to patreon.com/DVR and check out their pledge levels and make a pledge. I've done it. I am now a DVR Podcast Network patron, and I'm happy to get it because I get to hear some of the podcasts a little earlier than the rest of you do, perhaps. Also, I know that I'm going to continue to get even more great podcasts about other television shows by continuing to support the DVR Podcast Network. So quickly go to the DVR Podcast Network's Patreon page. That's patreon.com/DVR and pledge your support for Podcast Winterfell on any level. $1, $3, $10. There's all kinds of neat little perks as well for you, depending on what level you pledge at. Thanks for listening to me babble. Take care.